fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get three-pound packs of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $2.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Finally, John, we are back with popcorn and pile drivers. It took us a little while. We had to get through some stuff. We had to get through lots of wrestling. Wanted to wait through the Olympics and the G1, but we are absolutely 100% back with popcorn and pile drivers. Our review of the 1974 The Wrestler with Vern Gagne and Ed Asner. Now, your mentor, or one of your mentors, Roland Alexander, our good friend, Big Dave Meltzer, this was kind of the movie for like their teenage fandom.
Yes.
And you are also a fan of 1970s wrestling. What? Just a quick summary, without giving too much away, what did you think? You've seen this before, probably not in a while, but what did you think going in versus what you saw as a grown up here?
I thought it was fun for the wrestling in ring stuff, seeing all the footage, but it felt like a very disjointed movie. Like I had like an identity crisis, I think, at many times. And as I was watching the movie, I felt like there was a really good movie there that they could have told if they told the story a different way with the you know, Vern Gagne's character and also Billy Robinson's character. But like I mean, if you want to see, I think it's worth checking out just for the wrestling, because you get to see Ray Stevens in a ring, you know, Bachwinkle, Billy Robinson.
You mean Ray Stevens the murderer, you mean?
Yeah, killing the young I forget what, not the young, the older dealer wrestler. But it was a lot of things happening. I mean, it was mobsters. It was protecting the wrestling business. It was, you know, treating the wrestling business with respect, like a legitimate sport, but, you know, trying to convince sports writers to cover this as like a legitimate sport. I think Ed Asner did a really good job as best he could with what he got with this script. Like, they needed someone to kind of keep this grounded, you know, and with his acting ability, he did that. But, like I said, very disjointed. That's all I can say this film, because like I just didn't have like it just didn't know like what it wanted to be.
Do you think Ed Asner was a real fan, or do you think he went to like the Vern Gagne school of wrestling in order to take this role?
He went to the Barnyard to learn the wrestling. No, I don't know if he was a fan, though. He looks like he could have played, if he was a little younger, played Strangler Lewis. He looks just like Strangler Lewis. He's those old pictures of Strangler Lewis. I think it was a job for him, it seemed like. You know, I wonder what the hopes for. Was it supposed to be like the Vern Gagne thinks this is gonna be this huge Hollywood production?
Oh, I asked Dave Meltzer on Wrestling Observer Radio the other day, and I cut his answer, so I have that as one of our questions that will play towards the end when we get to that section. I just wondered, like, why did Ed Asner do this? Like, did Vern twist his arm? He's like, I'm going to put you in an arm bar unless you do this. Like, it didn't help his career in any way.
No.
Though I know the wrestling industry as a whole, like, really respected him for doing it because he was a legitimate guy. You know, it's like today, if you were to ask, you know, who's a sitcom star in today's television, and you're like, hey, you know, want to do this movie? It's not going to make any money, and you're probably not going to get paid a lot, but, you know, you'll be a good guy if you do it. That's essentially what he did, it seemed like.
I think Ed Asner was just one of those actors that just liked to work, right? Because he worked till, I think he passed recently.
Yeah, he passed away like a year or two ago.
Yeah, because I was just saw him recently on was it Curb Your Enthusiasm? I think he what he played on an episode of that. So
he was, always, you know what he was in that people will recognize? I believe it was either the second, the first or second season of Cobra Kai. He actually plays Johnny's dad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think he's always kept himself busy with work, you know, and then I was just, you know, one of my favorite character actors, you know, Richard Klein. You know, you see him in everything. He's also in Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's like, he pops up in all these movies and television shows. I just, one of my favorites, when I see him, I always have a smile on my face when I see him because he's always, he just can do anything, right? He's a great character actor.
You mean Larry Dallas, Richard Klein?
Do you know what I'm talking about? The guy from, was it Spin City and all that? Was it?
Yeah, with the guy from Three's Company.
Is he in it? No.
You're talking about a different guy then. Because Richard Klein.
Did I say his name wrong?
Richard Klein is Larry Dallas from Three's Company. Unless it's spelled differently.
Oh, Richard Kine. I don't know what the hell I'm saying. Gosh, sorry. My apologies, Richard Klein from Three's Company. But anyways, Richard Kind.
Richard Kind, yes. He has a very memorable face.
Yeah. It's a very kind face, too. His quote is like, because he takes like, he takes a lot of jobs. And his quote was, "What else am I going to do on a Tuesday and a Wednesday? I could go play golf, but I've already got a lot of golf." So he just likes to work. I think Ed Asner probably was one of those guys that just took roles that he found interesting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the cast of this movie. So, Ed Asner. So, Vern Gagne, basically, the script is written so that Vern Gagne, the wrestler, is played by Vern Gagne as Mike Bullard. And Vern Gagne, the promoter, is played by Ed Asner as Frank Bass. So, Vern Gagne, the human being, is like, I need two people to play me. Like, I can't play both. I'm going to play me. Ed Asner is going to play me. Elaine Giftos plays Debbie, the woman from the office who helps out Frank Bass with the wrestling office. Billy Robinson plays Billy Taylor, does not play Billy Robinson, plays Billy Taylor. Sarah Miller plays Betty Bullard, who is Mike Bullard, Vern Gagne's character's wife. And she's very worried.
Yeah, I thought that was Vern Gagne's real wife because she's an actress.
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. She was very worried. She was a very worried woman, and she played a very worried character with the high pitched voice when she was getting worried. Because and the reason why she was worried is because two wrestlers had died in the ring not long before this movie was filmed. So her thought was Mike Bullard is old. And she doesn't want him to die in the ring. So she's very worried. She wants him to retire. Sam Menaker is the mobster who is the foil, is Frank Bass's foil in this movie until the two greatest men of all time give him his comeuppance. Harold Sakata plays an Asian gentleman who tries to utilize his karate on Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch in a bar. Yeah, and Joe Scarpello plays Jack Cutter, who is mangled and killed by the Bombs Away knee drop by Ray Stevens in a match. Other wrestlers in this movie. Now, I couldn't tell you where these guys were, but this is the list, and I'm taking this from Wikipedia. Everyone knows how I love Wikipedia. Don Morocco is in this movie. I did not see him. I did not recognize him. James Bleers is in this movie in a very memorable scene. We'll talk about him in a bit. Did you see Danny Hodge in this movie?
I saw the other...
Dan Gable's in it.
Dan Gable, I saw that.
See Danny Hodge in this movie. Yeah. The Bruiser is in this movie. The Crusher is in this movie. Dan Gable, Dusty Rhodes, Wahoo McDaniel, Joe Dusick, Nick Bockwinkle, superstar Billy Graham, who cuts an amazing promo, Ray Stevens, Nature Boy Ric Flair is a very young man who I think his entire job in this movie is to cut off the lights so that they could show the Billy Robinson film, highlights film.
Was he in the background of the bar scene or something? Because
I thought maybe when Vern was talking about the wrestling and those guys were doing like exhibitions to grab
the training.
Stuff. Yeah, I thought he may have been in that one. Greg Gagne, I didn't see Greg. Larry Henning is in the very first scene.
Mm-hmm.
Wilbur Snyder, I didn't remember seeing Wilbur. Ken Patera is in the gym.
He wrestles Eddie Graham in that amateur scene.
Okay.
Pro wrestling exhibition scene.
Ken Patera, I believe, is in the gym scene when he's just lifting weights. Dory Funk Jr., Pedro Morales, they're the champions as they're trying to create the Super Bowl of wrestling, Vern being the other champion.
Yeah.
What did you think about Vince Sr.?
That was a thrill. That was cool. I think it was really cool when they're having their little round table of wrestling promoters.
Yeah.
And that's where my favorite line was said in the movie, but we'll talk about that later. I thought that was great. You know, like that's a cool moment to have him. He's very rarely seen on camera, I think, especially ever. So it's quick. It's like to the side. It's not really focused on. I don't think even Frank Dusick is even Frank. I think it's just his back as heads in the movie, right? So
a very jacked up Mike Graham. He wrestles with Dan Gable.
He was a powerlifter. A lot of people don't remember that.
His pops, Eddie Graham, Wally Carbo, and I think, you know, there's some other names on here that I don't recognize, so I'm not going to mention them just because I'm not sure. But that's about the majority of the wrestlers in there.
Hardboiled Haggerty was the bartender.
Yes, I missed that one. He's the bartender. Okay, so let's go through the plot and the story of this movie.
Plots.
So the opening scene is a wrestling scene, lots of slow motion and music. Vern Gagne as Mike Bullard beats Larry before he was even the axe, right? Is he he's much younger, or is he actually the axe in this movie?
I think he should be the axe by now, 1974.
Okay.
Or when it's filmed, I think 72, probably 73.
So Ed Asner, like we said, he's the promoter, Frank Bass. Debbie is his assistant. And it's unclear to Frank Bass, but it is completely clear to this audience that Debbie, the woman who helps him in the office and answers the phones, is flirting with him. And he's just kind of like not taking the bait, or he's oblivious to it. Or there's just a scene later, but I'm like, brother, you're like in your late 40s. You look like you're 75.
Yeah, yeah.
And this young woman is like just hitting on you constantly, and you're just no selling it. Like
I
understand it.
I had a bit of a crush. She was into wrestling. She wanted to watch footage all the time. You know, I kind of like that. I digged her. She wanted to pull the reels, study the footage of Mike Bullard's and his future contenders. What a woman.
Here's one of my questions that I was going to ask towards the end, but I'll just ask it now. So Ed Asner plays Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Mm-hmm.
Does Elaine Giftos get this position or this role because she kind of sort of looks like Mary Tyler Moore?
Kind of sort of. She looks like her little sister, right? She does. They look a lot alike. Actually, when I was rewatching this, I had to go to the cast because I'm like, who is God? I know it's not Mary Tyler Moore, but she looks familiar. I've seen her in other movies before. So, but yeah, she looks just like her. It was very, very weird seeing this. But she did a great, I thought she was pretty good. You know, she did her best she could with what she was given in this movie.
So I'm with you in that she was extremely attractive and very charming. And I kind of sort of went into the Google machine and looked her up and saw and looked for whatever other stuff that she may have done in her career. And this is the second Three's Company reference in the first 15 minutes of this podcast. But she was on two different episodes of Three's Company playing two different characters.
Yeah.
One-time, you know, characters.
She last worked like in 2000 something, right? Like
she's still alive, I believe, too.
Yeah. She's probably wondering about this movie. Yeah.
maybe our podcast will open up some opportunities for her.
Mm-hmm.
The great Elaine Giftos there. Okay, so Bruiser and Crusher are in the wrestling office because they need to get their plane tickets and their visas because they are on their way to Japan. Frank gets a call from one Betty Bullard, Mike Bullard's wife, and he has to make a house call. Like, this is a concerning call that he just took. So Betty references Ray Gunkel, who had just passed away in the ring, and says that she's worried about Mike Bullard, played by Vern Gagne, dying in the ring. And Frank's reasoning with her is, we have this opportunity, you know, the Super Bowl. Well, we're going to create a Super Bowl of wrestling. We have all of these different companies. We're going to work together. We're going to create one super champion. And you know that if Mike knows about this, he's going to want to wrestle. He's not going to want to retire. So let's wait until after we do the Super Bowl of wrestling. And this is the part where they mix kayfabe with wrestling is still is kind of worked, because the idea of putting together this tournament,
mm-hmm.
Frank Bass is like, well, Mike's going to win because Mike's the best. But there's still this kind of like, you know, it's not completely on the level the way that they're talking about it, but he's trying to present it as. So it's one of those moments where, as you're watching, if you're not a wrestling fan, you're probably wondering, like, what the hell is going on right now? So the mob bookie guy, played by Sam Miniker, the mobster, he wants to work with Frank to fix the matches. He wants to get Frank a cut. And so this is another one of those things. It's like, okay, you're basically telling the booker to make the other guy win, but then you're trying to tell me that Mike Bullard's going to beat everybody as if it's a shoot, but you could mm-hmm. still fix the matches. So that part confused the hell out of me too.
Yeah, or maybe he wanted to... Maybe it's like boxing, like paying off the guys to take a dive.
Mike Bullard would have to be in on it, right?
Like, yeah,
Not only would he have to be in on it, he would have to make out more than those other guys to give up his mm-hmm. spot, because mm-hmm. Frank will tell us later in the movie that Mike Bullard makes more money than everybody. That belt is worth $250,000. Okay. Yeah. So this is where I pull, I very much utilize the Wrestling Observer. And I just searched for any search query with Ed Asner and The Wrestler, because if you just search The Wrestler, imagine how many times Dave has written the word wrestler in all of the mm-hmm. years. So I had to like make sure that those search queries were a little bit more fine tuned. By the way, this entire conversation with Mob Bookie guy and Ed Asner's character, Frank, these guys are shirtless in a steam room. There's lots of large stomachs right next to faces and sweat and towels and such. So that is the scene in which this happened. So according to Big Dave, in his bio on Ed Asner, Sam Miniker, who plays the mob boss, was a former wrestler. Mm-hmm. And at the time of this movie, the television announcer in Indianapolis he played the two-bit mob guy who was unable to fix the fight because, as Frank Bass said, Bullard could buy and sell you multiple times. All right, Lord James Blear. He has the number one contender for Mike Bullard, and that is Billy Robinson, in this movie known as Billy Taylor. They cut to a scene of a match between Wahoo McDaniel and superstar Billy Graham. Then they show Jack Cutter, as we mentioned, played by Joe Scarpello, against Ray Stevens. And in the movie, Ray Stevens comes off the top rope with a knee drop, and he is DQ'd, and Jack Cutter dies. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like... Well, as I'm watching it, I'm just thinking, oh, this is a nice movie. And then, boom, he dies. And I'm like, whoa, wait a second here. What's going on?
And they treated it all with seriousness when Jack Cutter's dead body was in the middle of the ring. the ring announcer has to go in there and announce that he's died in the ring. And he just, and poor Jack Cutter, just, he's just dead right in the ring. No one's attending to him. He's just laying there motionless.
On one hand, my mind goes to Vince McMahon getting mad when someone asked him about Owen Hart and whether he holds any responsibility, and he screamed at them and said no. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, my mind went to when Bryan Danielson was in the plastic bag, and instead of getting a stretcher for him, they just had the medics carry him out of the ring. I was like, there's two ways that my mind went on this scenario.
No, so, they everyone in the back just watched, one was waiting for Bryan to die. They're just all sitting back. No one wanted to come out to help him, apparently.
Hey, man, if he dies, new spot for us. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
we get a chance for the title if he dies.
Maybe Tony was feared for his life at that point.
Maybe.
Yeah, you don't want to go down there.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ed Asner has a conversation with some media people after the night is over. And some of these media people were like, it's not that important. It's just wrestling. And Ed Asner said, he's like, how can you guys not cover this? Like a real story, like this man died and, oh, you know, it's wrestling. Do you know that these wrestlers, they work out 6 hours a day and they travel so far to do these matches, and they, you know, the champion makes 250K. He's trying to present to these writers who are just like, this is fake stuff. Who cares about this fake stuff? And he's trying to say, no, like, this is really important. Like, this situation, this man died. This is really important. And he kind of gets one or two of the writers just like, okay, Frank, we'll write about this, and you know, we'll talk about the you know, what happened in a serious way. That was one of the weirder things in the movie to me, because the reality of the situation is, if that had happened, and obviously it happened twice in the 70s before this movie started, and I have to imagine if there were media covering those matches, there may not have been media covering those matches. You cover it like if someone died normally, like in any scenario. I don't know a journalist who's just like, he's only a wrestler, who cares if he dies. So that was a little off. That segment was a little off to me.
Yeah, I know I know those lines are pretty awful. But here's the thing, like, they're trying to present wrestling as this big deal, right? This big championship match, Super Bowl of wrestling coming up, etc. This big match with Mike Bullard and Billy Taylor, etc. But then you have this scene where Ed Asner's character, the promoter, is upset with the media because they don't cover wrestling as a big deal. So one word, you're trying to make, you want to say wrestling, you want to present wrestling as a big deal for the viewer at home, but they're also, you're telling them too that wrestling is not a big deal when it comes to real sports or mainstream sports.
Yeah. So the mobster comes back and, you know, he's talking to Asner and he's like, you know, this Billy Taylor kid, he's got to win because he wants to put money on Billy Taylor. And, you know, the Frank Bullard is just like, not that he's completely against Billy Taylor beating Mike Bullard, but this is actually kind of making him like not want it to happen because this mob guy is trying to intimidate him. So, Ed Asner, Frank Bass, he takes a phone call. It is none other than the pre-American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And what Dusty was calling him about originally, before Frank kind of went off on him, he wanted an advance on their pay because they're on the road. And they're kind of causing some trouble and breaking some stuff. So they wanted an advance on their pay because they needed to pay it. But Frank is just like yelling at him just because he's upset about the whole scenario. And so by the time Dick Murdoch's like, hey, man, did you ask him? And Dusty's like, no, I didn't even have an opportunity. He was kind of mad at it already. So then I thought, okay, this scene is over and we're going to move on. Oh, no. There was an evil Japanese man who came into the bar that they were at. And the evil Japanese man, all he wanted to do, This was sort of like, you know, 10 years or 15 years before the Gracies, where the Gracies would just show up and, you know, if you picked a fight with them, then they would just choke you out to promote their jiu-jitsu. Mm-hmm. That was what this was. This guy, he comes in and he's just like throwing karate poses out, and he's just like breaking tables and picking on old Dusty and Dick Murdoch. And Dusty's like, hey, man, you go get him. And then Dick Murdoch gets beat up and Dusty's got to come for the save. And they finally overwhelm the guy. According to Big Dave, the guy who plays the evil Japanese man, Harold Sakata, former Olympic weightlifting silver medalist.
I don't understand. This came out of like left field. You know, I think it was okay with the drunk guy at the bar, you know, calling wrestlers fake or, you know, talking trash and getting his ass kicked. That's all good. But the Japanese hitman that comes in and wants to challenge, like, that they should just kept it with the drunk guy, right? Or maybe a group of junk guys are just talking trash. You know, we could beat you. You're no big deal. You know, you're no big deal or something like that. And like maybe instead of like this old man that was the drunk guy, maybe some young college stud who thinks he's just badass and wants to press his girlfriend at the bar, you know, talk some trash, and then they gets his ass kicked by these big, you know, country boys. You know,
yeah,
Dick Murdoch. That it was such a strange scene. Like it was okay. It would have been fine if they just kept it like that. Not with, you know, the Japanese hitman and so wacky.
It was a, our pro wrestlers can beat up your karate guys kind of statement.
I guess that was the point. You know, I mean, I understand. Like, okay, I think it would have been a good idea to point out that, yeah, you know, wrestlers have it tough because people want to test them all the time, but it's not a smart thing to do is test them. But not like this karate showdown was just so wacky.
So Harold Sakata, also known as pro wrestling's Tosh Togo, but better known to most as the villain from Goldfinger, Odd Job.
Professor Torchinaka was unavailable, I guess, huh?
I guess.
He's usually the Hollywood call. You call him out. 1974, I think he was still working, though, actually. I think he was still maybe worse. Like, oh, shit, he had Vince McMahon. He's probably working for New York. New York, they couldn't send Professor Torchinaka down.
All right, so there's a match, not a wrestling match, but a tennis match between Frank Bass and Mike Bullard. So Vern's back in the mix. They go out and play tennis, and tennis in like the 60s and 70s was like a social sport. Like you think of, I don't know, pickleball today, pickleball, or something, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, and it was just like, oh yeah, everyone knows how to play tennis. You put on the shortest shorts you can find possible, and you know, your nice shirt. You're not going to wear like a tank top or a t-shirt. You're going to wear your nice polo because it's a social sport, but it's also kind of like a elite sport in a sense. And so they went and played tennis, and then there was a match, a scientific match, is what they called it, between Billy Taylor, so Billy Robinson, and Nick Bockwinkel. And in the match, they're having this nice scientific match. Billy Taylor, or Nick Bockwinkel, kind of does something that was that what it was? Pull the hair?
Yeah.
So Mike Bullard, or Frank Bass, is like, come on, cut that stuff off. And then Billy Taylor wins the scientific match. And
they never said what the exhibition was for. It was just an exhibition, right?
So I think it was because Billy Taylor didn't have a name. Frank didn't really know if he was the goods or not. Mm-hmm. And so Bockwinkel's your guy to test him out to see if he's the goods. But Mike Bullard, Vern Gagne, was also smart because he's like, okay, if this is the guy that everyone's talking about, I got to see if he's really as good as everyone says. So it was like this weird scenario, which kind of leads into the main story of this movie. So Billy Taylor wins with the butterfly suplex, or whatever they would have called it back then. Today, Excalibur would probably call it a butterfly suplex.
Double underhook suplex.
Yeah, double underhook. So Mike Bullard and his wife are having an argument in their house. And this is where she kind of gets a little high-pitched with her voice and very overdramatic. He says, look, I'm going to win this whole Super Bowl thing, and then I can retire. I promise you I will retire after the Super Bowl thing. And look, if I lose, then I will retire because there's no reason to keep wrestling. So there's a scene where Vern, Mike Bullard, is kind of promoting his school and all of his wrestlers. And this is where we see Dan Gable and a jacked up Mike Graham wrestle on the mat in front of Vern. And so more Mike Bullard demonstrations with the wrestlers. They're very much trying to show pro wrestlers as great athletes, doing the calisthenics, doing the squats, just well-conditioned machines, very disciplined. Like, yeah, I don't know if, you know, if NXT was like, hey, you know, journalists or public media pass, come watch our athletes train. It would probably be something similar like that.
Yeah, it was also an interesting scene. I just felt like it was a scene that Vern wanted in the movie to showcase to the audience watching the film that, you know, this is a real sport. It's a tough sport. And like, there's a difference between amateur and pro, you know, went over the different rules of the very interesting stuff that he was trying to get over here. The realism of pro wrestling. It felt like it was like, we have to make this point here. Like we have to have this in the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another part of this movie where I'm like, are we trying to say that this is real or not real? Because Billy Taylor goes to have dinner at Mike Bullard's house. And this is somewhat of Mike Bullard playing mind games with the young kid who's supposed to be taking his spot. But if this was like a real fight, are these guys really going to have dinner at each other's house? So again, if you don't understand wrestling, I kind of wonder about this scene. I don't know if people would really understand what was going on or if they would get even more confused. It's like in Rocky, before the first fight in Rocky, Apollo Creed's like, hey, Stallion. Night before the fight, why don't you come over and have dinner? We'll hang out and have drinks. And he's like, okay. So that's pro wrestling, though. So then we get to the promoters meeting. And I believe it's supposed to be Sam Mushnick's meeting, but I don't think we see Sam Mushnick.
No.
But we do see Vince McMahon Sr. And they're trying to set up the Super Bowl. Vince Sr.'s got Pedro Morales, Mushnick would have Dory Funk Jr., and then Frank Bass has Mike Bullard, and they're all telling him, like, dude, you need like the younger guy. Like, you don't need this old man. If you want to win this thing, you need the young guy. And he sticks to his guns with his guy, with his Mike Bullard. So Billy Taylor beats Lord Blear in a match. And it's kind of setting up this idea of like, okay, he's the up and comer. He's the next guy. He's legitimate. He has a chance to beat Mike Bullard. So the mobster comes back to intimidate Frank. And then Frank decides that he's going to have Bullard and Billy Taylor wrestle in Chicago. Now, what happens, how we get here, is Frank has a meeting with Billy and with Mike. And in this meeting, Vern Gagne's character, Mike, kind of pretends that he's scared of having the match, almost to the point of like maybe he's flaking out on wanting to wrestle Billy Taylor before this Super Bowl of Wrestling thing happens. And so what he does is he actually is working both of them, because what he wants is he wants the promoter to actually create some hype for the match, because he doesn't think the other guy can carry the promotional side of the ball. So Billy wants the match with Mike, and Mike basically tells him, dude, you're not a contender. You're not a top guy. He thinks that people need to know Billy Taylor, which is wrestling promotion, right? Which is everything that we talk about on our podcast. And then he claims that he's got an ankle injury. So that's why he begs off and he doesn't want the match.
He limps off. That's one of my favorite promos. Limps off to have the meeting, and Billy Robinson says, did he have that limp when he walked in?
And so what the promoter tells Billy Taylor is like, just watch out for his dropkick. Like, don't let him hit the dropkick, because that'll be curtains for you. So right around this time is when Elaine Giftos as Debbie puts the moves on the old man. And it is a very uncomfortable scene, because Ed Asner's character is someone who really doesn't believe in himself. And he's got this like young, a very attractive woman who's like throwing herself at him. And he
just looks so old. Looks like this lady's grandfather. Not.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what it was so weird too.
So Frank Bass goes on television and he basically calls out Mike Bullard and he says that we're going to have this match, and Billy Taylor and Mike, they're going to wrestle in Chicago in 2 weeks. And Vern as Mike Bullard and the wife Betty are actually watching this on television. They're watching Frank Bass cut this promo.
Fireplace in the background on, lights are down, you know, it's a very romantic scene.
And he's like smiling and he's like, ah, it worked. They played into my hands. Like, I wanted this match so that this young whippersnapper can get over, and then we can kind of set up the bigger match later. Like, the plan fell right in, you know, right in. So then, the mobster, so Frank and Mike, they do sync up, and Frank realizes that he got worked by Mike. So there was that moment to kind of tell the audience, like, he realizes that he got worked by his champion. So then, I'm not sure if this is exactly the night of the match. I think it's the night of the big match. But Frank is at the building and he sees the mobster, and the mobster and his cronies actually has Debbie, the Elaine Giftos character. They actually have her and they're like threatening him and they're threatening her. And basically they beat him up. They just beat up poor Frank. And who comes to save him? By the way, the mobster guy says to Frank that if Mike Bullard wins, you're going to die.
Yeah. This scene was very similar to a scene that we covered earlier on Popcorns and Pile Drivers with No Holds Barred.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who comes to save him but the heroes of this film? The Bruiser and the Crusher.
Awesome.
Two jacked up crazy men,
yeah,
beat up the mobsters and save Frank, and also save Debbie, who they were threatening to beat up as well. And then after Mike Bullard, Vern Gagne's character, comes out, and Frank is like, hey man, like, you're a little late here, buddy. I'm getting beat up by all these dudes. So the match happens. Mike Bullard, Billy Taylor in the middle of the ring. And we get this like cliffhanger. What happens is
the wrestler.
The other wrestler.
Yeah.
So they're having the match, and the old savvy vet, Mike Bullard, setting up the dropkick. Billy Taylor has this look on his face. It's just like, ah, shit. I'm going to get hit with this thing.
Because he mentioned one of the meetings, Billy Taylor and Ed Asner's character, the promoter, Billy Taylor, Ed Asner told him, like, watch out for that dropkick. If he hits that dropkick, you're finished. And then Billy Taylor says, he'll never beat me with that dropkick. And that's where the cliffhanger was. The foot, the bottom of Mike Bullard's foot to the screen.
And then that ended the movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so from one of the old observers, Big Dave says, the idea back then is the movie in its own way was to build to Vern Gagne and Billy Robinson and not to give people a clean finish. So it was like the first of three matches to build to the third match or something where no one knows what happens.
Those viewers that aren't wrestling fans that watch the movies and all of a sudden become interested in pro wrestling have to see the finish of this match. Have to buy tickets to the arena to go to see Billy Robinson versus Vern Gagne, though they wouldn't really know them as that, right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah,
really, yeah. So
that is going to be one of my questions in a second here. All right, a couple of factoids here. Dude. So we mentioned the Ray Gunkel death. There's also the Torres death that Ed Asner's character screaming at the journalists about.
Mike DiBiase.
That is Alberto Torres from June 13th, 1971, and DiBiase from even before then. The Torres death, and this is from the Ox Baker bio, Torres death was related to a match on June 13th, 1971 in New England, with Torres and Cowboy Bob Ellis defending the Midwest Tag Team titles against Ox Baker and the Claw, who was Tom Andrews Anderson under a mask. During the match, the Claw came off the middle ropes and landed on Torres. Torres died of a ruptured pancreas 3 days later at Emmanuel Hospital in Omaha. Oh, sorry, it was Nebraska, not New England. New England.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. That's okay.
The death got national news coverage at the time with the idea it stemmed from an accident in the ring. A few years later, the scene was somewhat reenacted in Vern Gagne's 1974 movie, The Wrestler, where the fictitious wrestler Jack Cutter, played by former NCAA champion Joe Scarpello, was killed when Ray Stevens delivered a bombs away knee drop off the top rope. In fact, in the movie, when Ed Asner was talking to the press about the death of Cutter, he specifically mentioned the name Torres in his speech about wrestlers who had passed away from combat in the ring. So fast forward. There's an angle that comes out of this death, and Ramon Torres tells George Shire the next year that Alberto had had a ruptured pancreas and wasn't feeling well before the match. So it wasn't anything that had to do with being in the match. He was already sick going into the match, and then after the match is when he passed away.
Yeah, but they... the Claw was able to use that as, you know, even though he wasn't a, you know, personally it was a, you know, not a thing he wanted to use, but, you know, promoters back then would use whatever. And he used that to get heat where he went. And then Ox Baker, I think same thing with Gunkel, right? I think he was in the match with Gunkel, I believe he was, if I remember correctly.
I think he was in both.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. So Ox Baker took credit he took credit for both of those. So the heart punch, right? That's how they got that over. Yeah.
All right. And this is from the Billy Robinson biography in the Wrestling Observer. Dave wrote, "The scene in The Wrestler of Lord James Blear, a British wrestling star who moved to Hawaii and became as much a fixture on that island as the sand on Waikiki Beach, showed up at the wrestling office in Minneapolis with reel to reel of Robinson and wowing the promoter half of Vern Gagne, played by Ed Asner, wasn't exactly how it happened in real life, but it wasn't a big stretch. Blears actually called Gagne and told him that he had the greatest pro wrestler in the world living in Hawaii and wanted Gagne to bring him to the AWA. According to Greg Gagne, who said this to Bill Apter, my father met Billy in Hawaii. He was wrestling over there for Ed Francis and Lord James Blears. Lord James Blears told my father, we have a guy from England and we think he's fantastic and we think he'd be a great asset to the AWA. Okay. You had a quote that I couldn't even figure out a quote from this movie, and there's no real reference point on any blogs or any websites where, you know, they list some popular quotes because no one's really watched this movie. But you did have a quote that you liked from that movie.
It was during when the promoters were talking about the Super Bowl. That's the one that Vince McMahon Sr., Frank Dusick, apparently Sam Mushnick off screen, and they're talking about, you know, Mike Bullard, Vern Gagne's character, being old. And my favorite line was when Mike Bullard, I mean, when Ed Asner said, Dory Funk Jr.'s bald. Just cracked me up. Because, yes, he is bald. He was, you know, prematurely bald. You know, he was still in his, like, I think he was the early 30s at the time.
Yeah.
But Mike Bullard, his champion, is bald. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That also that cracked me up as well. So,
I think Vern is like 15 years older than Dory Funk Jr.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what age he was when he retired. Was he 51? And no. God, what was he in 1981 then? If he was, you think he's 45 and 74? It's a good question. But yeah. Vern, God, yeah. he's been doing this, but because he's bald too, that's always cracked me up when I would watch when I was younger, you know, because remember AWA was on ESPN, right? And one of my favorite things was that when they had like the classic moment in AWA wrestling in the middle of the show. At the time, I didn't know they were dying the promotion on the last leg, and they're just adding footage to stretch the show out to make that hour,
right?
But I never seen this old stuff before, so I was excited to see it. And I remember seeing some stuff with Vern Gagne, and I respected Vern Gagne because he was the legendary champion of the AWA, and also my dad talked about Vern Gagne as well, so I knew who he was. But I saw the old man with the, you know, the bald head and the hair on the side, and I'm like, man, this guy was like this great champion. You know, like you see Bruno Sammartino, who was this burly guy, this strong guy. Even Bob Backlund, he looked goofy, but he was a pretty jacked up dude.
Yeah.
It's just weird, you know, with Vern Gagne as a kid and watching footage of him.
All right. I have three questions as I was watching this movie. Outside of Gagne and Billy Robinson, everyone else used their real name, their real wrestling name. So why did Vern Gagne and Billy Robinson use fake names if everyone else used real names?
I have no idea about I felt like they should have had their, if they want to cross promote this with ticket sales for the AWA, I would think they would want to do, you know, have their Vern Gagne have his real name and also Billy Robinson. And then if the idea was the finish was the cliffhanger, so people would buy tickets to see Billy Robinson versus Vern Gagne match on in person, then they should have kept the real names. I don't know why he did fake names.
Now, we made a little fun of No Holds Barred in that Hulk Hogan should have just been Hulk Hogan in that movie. Why is he Rip? Because Zeus comes into WWF as Zeus. His name is the same from the movie.
Yeah.
So at least they had that part correct. But yeah. I was just like, I was confused, especially if what Dave was saying was true, was they wanted to promote because of the cliffhanger angle, and then it's like, oh wait, is that Mike Bullard? No, that's Vern Gagne. Wait, is that Billy Robinson? Is different. So yeah, I was confused about that. Okay, we answered the Mary Tyler Moore question about Elaine Giftos. Okay, so I asked Dave the other day, I said, what was Vern's end game with this movie? Did he just want to like get into Hollywood? Did he, you know, want to show wrestling is legitimate or real or whatever? And so so Dave had an answer. And so this is, you know, we both also do podcasts with the F4W Online Wrestling Observer. So it's a bit of a crossover, a Fight Game Media Wrestling Observer crossover, where I ask Dave Meltzer. For the crossover.
He was trying to build up pro wrestling, you know, and you know, in a mainstream way, and it did not go mainstream. But that was the mentality behind it. And, you know, in its own way, maybe build up Vern Gagne and Billy Robinson and their feud. Because I remember they did use it in Hawaii, which the movie did open in Hawaii. And they were feuding in Hawaii when the movie was out because they would do promos. And they would, you know, I remember Billy Robinson's promos. I don't necessarily remember Vern doing this, but he probably did. But Billy, you know, said that, like, you know, we had the movie, but this one's real. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, you got to do this in the movie, and that's fine. But this match is like, this is for the real championship and everything. So they did reference it in passing, you know, in the build for the Vern Gagne, Billy Robinson matches in Honolulu.
So what he also told me is that Vern was bothered because all of those promoters were in the movie, but they didn't actually promote the movie, which was part of his strategy, was to get all of them to promote it. But they're holding on to their own territories, right? Why do they want to promote Vern Gagne versus Billy Taylor in an area in which they would not make any money out of it? So I don't know if that was like a, you know, maybe that was part of the deal for them being in it, or if they reneged on what Vern wanted. But Dave said that Vern was pretty bothered that nobody promoted it. Nobody promoted the movie. And then it didn't really do any business in other places outside of their territory.
It was weird because the AWA was outside of the NWA. I think the WWWF in 1973 went back into the NWA. That's why it wasn't, had world title status at the time. So I wonder why they're all involved. Was it the idea like, you guys can help me promote the show, but you also being in, you get a payday. And maybe they decided to take the payday and said, we're not going to promote the show, you know? Because, yeah, you're right. Why put Vern Gagne on this pedestal of wrestling in their own territory? They're not even going to have him, you know?
I mean, what they could have done if they were all in agreement is you have Vern Gagne and Billy Taylor, and then each other federation brings their main event, and you just have this big night, and you can kind of play off of this movie. And but it doesn't sound like they were all interested in doing business together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Shocking.
Gene, there's no Roger Ebert review of this movie, as far as I could find.
I love this review.
But Gene Siskel, at the time, the Chicago Tribune gave the film 2 stars out of 4, calling it as predictable as well a wrestling match. All of the material outside the ring seems phony compared to the real phoniness inside the ropes. And I think that might just be Gene not really understanding wrestling, because I thought the outside the ropes stuff was actually pretty interesting outside of this weird trying to make it believe that it's real. And maybe that's what he was actually alluding to. But what did you think of the in-ring stuff? Because they really super slow-mo'd a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it had the kind of sound effects that you would hear back in that time, where it didn't really sound like, you know, real punches or anything. It was really slow. And then you kind of compare it to what movies did in the 80s with action, and it doesn't really compare. But I can't even think of a movie in the 70s, as far as action was concerned, to compare it to.
Remember, Paradise Alley had the same kind of slow motion.
And I haven't seen Paradise Alley in forever. And that's another one that we're going to talk about.
I liked it. I thought it was cool. And I thought they slow-mo'd stuff that if you didn't know, you might think was legit, you know. But the wrestling was really good in this film. I mean, really good. I mean, there's some top level workers in this. Seeing Stevens do his thing, Bockwinkel, Robinson, even Vern Gagne do their thing was pretty cool to see.
Is that like the only footage of Ray Stevens? Like, is this? No. I haven't seen any Ray Stevens footage really out there.
There's quite a few. A lot of it's older, when he's like in the 80s, when he went to Mid-Atlantic stuff. But there's some stuff from him and some reels of stuff from San Francisco. There's a black and white match when he was younger in Australia that was really good. You know, you could see. I know everyone always says he's like the greatest wrestler of all time. You talk to a lot of people that grew up watching Steve. He was great. He's fantastic. I thought it was funny. In this movie, he cut a promo with jet black hair, but the match he had the dirty blonde. So that was pretty interesting.
And at that point, if you're doing this movie and you're like, are we going to take the time to go fix that and redo that scene and edit it out and cost money and time. No, we're keeping it in.
No.
All right. For my MVP, it's got to be the Bruiser and the Crusher for me, because I popped every time they were on the screen. It was my favorite part. I was just so excited to see them. And of course, I never got to see them. I'm a little too young to see them do their characters in real life. But who was the MVP for you?
I'm gonna say Ed Asner, because he's a professional guy on the show. That definitely Ed Asner has to be. He kept it all together.
I will say Vern, for not being an actor, he did have that like sly pro wrestler working everybody mentality thing, like down pat, like that worked for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just that slyness that he had. So I thought that worked. I would say my least favorite character was Betty Bullard, because she was just so over the top. Like, I didn't understand. Like, and maybe it's a time and place thing, but I'm like, yeah, like those accidents happen, but was it because he was old, or, you know, was it because it's just an accident? Like, you know, what's the reason? So I didn't like her character at all. The mobster wasn't all that intimidating. And did he actually flash a gun in the movie? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember seeing a gun, but also I was thinking, like, okay, yes, the Bruiser and the Crusher beat up the goons and beat up the mobster. But if this was a real mob, they would have come back later and handled everyone.
Maybe they did. Maybe the Bruiser,
that was a real cliffhanger.
In the sequel, the Bruiser and the Crusher died.
Oh, my gosh. Nah, they would have caught bullets with their teeth
and put it back at them. So overall, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I would say in the middle, because part of it, I think it's worth watching for the wrestling. And then the second half, the story is kind of disjointed, but it's a fun watch. I think if you're a diehard true wrestling fan, you gotta just, you know, check this off your bucket list. So
yeah, I think it's necessary for people to watch for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would give it a thumbs down as a movie. But at the same time, I did get a kick out of it because of the time and place. And now, with all the stuff that I talked to Dave about, if I kind of watched it again, I'm sure I would appreciate it even more. The other part, the other problem is that you and I watched it on a YouTube, like non-copyright thing, and the picture wasn't great. I think if we had like a little bit of a DVD upscale, I would see things a little bit more clearly. So if I do watch it again, you know, maybe just buy the DVD, like $5 or whatever you can find it.
Do you know how I watched this for the first time?
Hmm.
It was available early on Netflix, and I got the DVD. It came through, you know, the red sleeve and the red envelope with the white sleeve and the synopsis on it, and
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's how I watched it.
Okay, so what is left on our list of things that we can watch? So we grunt. What'd you say?
Grunt. I just saw that popped up on Tubi. Kids are obsessed with Beetlejuice right now, and then I found a Beetlejuice cartoon from apparently 89 to 91 on there.
Yeah, so that was from what I understand, that was a pretty successful cartoon for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't know they even made one. I just kind of, Hunter was the one. He thinks everything has a cartoon and a toy. So he asked me to find the Beetlejuice cartoon.
So we did Ready to Rumble. We did Iron Claw. We did No Holds Barred.
The Wrestler.
We did The Wrestler, the 2000s version.
Yes.
And then we did The Wrestler, the 70s version. So what should we watch next? Of the movies that we had on our original list, Paradise Alley, Stallone and Terry Funk, the one and only Henry Winkler, kind of loosely based on Gorgeous George, Fight for My Family, which is the Dwayne Johnson movie about Soraya and her crazy family. Body Slam, which is one of those goofy over the top
one, maybe that's the one. I was thinking Paradise Alley, but then I forgot what we had Body Slam on the list. Yeah,
All the Marbles, which we heard was pretty interesting. I think that's also a 70s movie.
Is that the women's wrestling one?
I think so.
Yeah,
Bad Guys, which is similar probably to Body Slam and like the 80s-ness of it, and then Night in the City, which I think we were told was like the best one out of all of them.
Yeah, I feel like if we're gonna do maybe one more, or maybe has to be probably Paradise Alley. I mean, these, Body Slam for sure, and I'm guessing Paradise Alley, though I've seen both. I'd like to see one that I haven't seen, maybe too, like, you know, those others you listed. So maybe you can do, like, I don't know what you want to do, Body Slam, and maybe you can leave it up to a vote for the final.
Well, what is the one that you haven't seen that you want to do, and we'll just do that one, and then because we'll set the next two after that already.
That last one I've never seen before.
Night in the City.
Yeah, I've never seen Night in the City or Bad Guys either.
Okay, why don't we do, so we'll do, now, we're not going to get through all of these by the end of the year, so maybe we'll just keep doing this until we're through all of these. Night in the City, we'll do Night in the City, and then we'll do another silly one, which would be Body Slam, and then we'll do, have you seen The One and Only?
No, not with Henry Winkler. No, I've not seen that.
Okay, and then we'll see The One and Only. We'll save Paradise Alley, because that's the one I want to see the most, and it'll be nice to kind of save it until the end.
You never seen that one, right?
I've seen it, but I was a little kid who was just on a Stallone high when I did see it.
So Night in the City from 1950, is this the same one, or is it a different
movie? There's two of them, I think. I think there's two of them. There's one like from the 50s and one from the 70s, maybe? I could totally be wrong about that.
I mean, Night in the City is a film noir, which I would definitely watch in a heartbeat. I love film noirs. I don't think I've seen that when I've seen most of them. So,
well, I think that might be the one then. That might be the, is that the one? The 19, 1950? Is it about pro wrestling? Stanislaw Sobieski?
Oh, shit. No, I didn't say that. It says, Gene Tierney. Isn't this
here's what Wikipedia says. Promoting
an aging Greek wrestler goes awry. Yeah. Man, 1950. Phil Noir? Shit, I'm down with that.
All right. So we'll go Night in the City, Body Slam, The One and the Only as our next three.
I never seen this one before. Okay, let's see where we're gonna stream it at. That's another question.
Yeah, we'll have to figure that out.
There's a 1992 of called Night in the City.
Is that about wrestling?
No.
That one's not about wrestling. No.
Streaming. Hold on. Streaming for free. Let's see that. Oh shit. Oh, you can watch it on YouTube.
Again.
But I'm sure the black and white version won't be too hard. The transfer might be a little better. So,
all right. So that's what we'll do next. We'll do Night in the City next. I'd never even heard about this movie until we started talking about wrestling movies.
Yeah. I never seen this one either. That's cool. Yeah. It looks like it's a pretty good transfer on YouTube. Actually, I'm looking at it right now. So,
all righty. We are done here. That is it. We will be back on Thursday on F4W. We may be going live on Thursday because we were supposed to go live last week, but then John had something come up kind of last minute, so we'll make up for it and we will go live this Thursday, more than likely 9:30-ish p.m. time frame, around that time frame. So for John LaRocca, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.